Welcome to Gospel Tangents Podcast. I'm Rick Bennett. Oliver Cowdery has been accused of practicing polygamy before he was authorized to do so. In our next conversation with Dr. Bill Smith, we'll address these rumors. Are they true? We'll also talk about Oliver's accusation about Joseph's dirty, nasty, filthy affair with Fanny Alger. Check out our conversation. Before you do that, I'd just like to remind you, please help us out and tell a friend about this podcast. We'd like to let as many people know about this as possible. You can subscribe to our Facebook page at facebook.com/gospeltangents and get immediate updates. Also, subscribe on YouTube at youtube.com/gospeltangents. Now back to our conversation. And I'm glad you brought up Oliver Cowdery because that brings up another interesting conundrum. Oliver was accused of either, depending on who's talking, either polygamy or adultery in the 1830s, and then turns around and accuses Joseph of adultery or polygamy with Fanny Alger in 1836, I believe it was when he referred to it as a dirty, filthy, nasty scraper.
38, yeah.
Whatever that, it was 1838. So can you talk a little bit about that dynamic between Joseph and Oliver?
I think the accusation about Oliver is really it's a Utah accusation.
Okay.
It doesn't really appear, I can't say that for sure, but it doesn't really appear heavily until Utah. And then it becomes a kind of reconciliation of apostolic authority. Where does the real authority lie? Well, you kind of have to push certain people aside so that there's no confusion about who has the real authority. And so that the apostles, Brigham Young, Heber C. Kimball, others, developed this apostolic narrative. I talk about this in the book too. So it was kind of important to show that Oliver was not really, that from early on he had problems, that he was kind of on the outside. That I think is wrong. I think it developed out of his story that happened because before Oliver left on his Lamanite mission to the borders of the Lamanites in Missouri, he's with Parley Pratt and a couple other guys there going to be missionaries out there to the Lamanites. And so they could get commissioned by Relation to do this. Before he leaves, he has asked Elizabeth Whitmer to marry him. So he's engaged to her. On the way through Ohio, he meets another woman there, falls madly in love with her, asks her to marry him. That's the extent of any Cowdery polygamy. That was a pretty big issue for a number of early Mormons. And some of his mission companions talk about this later, that was a big issue. And he has a high council session about this thing. He repents, says, I'm really going to marry Elizabeth. This other woman was just a flight of fancy or something. But that's the extent of it.
So did you say it was Mary Whitmer?
Elizabeth
Whitmer. Elizabeth Whitmer. So he wasn't faithful to Elizabeth Whitmer while he was...
Well, he wasn't faithful mentally, but there was nothing, no hanky-panky as far as we know.
Yeah. But that still seems strange. So.
But that's where the stories arose.
That's where the stories...
The stories come out of that, yeah. Now, there are other kinds of connections to... that you get other stories surfacing around that, but they're all late 1850s, 60s that really are sort of bent on kind of pushing Oliver Cowdery out of the picture as a kind of worthy person. So, and that's really unfortunate because I don't think any of that was true. But.
Okay. So the second engagement, you don't believe that was true?
The second engagement was...
It was true.
It was true.
But you think that they're just malign... The purpose is to malign Oliver.
Cowdery's intent is surely not to have two wives at the same time.
Okay.
He falls in love with another woman. his intent is to marry her instead.
Instead, okay. Yeah. Yeah, that makes more sense. So not truly polygamy.
No,
just,
no.
Just okay. All right. Well, so do you think that played a role when things kind of turned around and Oliver testified about Joseph and with Fanny?
There's no evidence as far as I know of that. But I think that Oliver and some other people were aware of the Alger affair, but really I don't talk about that in the book because it's terribly conflicted, and trying to fit it into the ceiling narrative, I think is really a mistake. Because I don't think that stuff had developed then. Joseph is not talking at all about this Elijah vision, and Oliver never talks about it. In Joseph's big kind of rehearsal when he's in hiding in 1842, and he writes this long letter. It's a letter of saints, which we have now, at least part of it, in DNC 128. He talks about all his visionary experiences. Some of them we never heard of, like meeting Michael on the banks of the Susquehanna, or at least hearing his voice. Things like that. He runs through a litany of these revelatory visionary instances that he's had. There's no mention at all of what went on in the 1836 vision, April 1836. The DNC 110 is not in evidence at all. And he never publicly talks about it. I will say that that he sort of settles the Peter, James, and John, Elijah conundrum, and I think is a real conundrum, in 1840. One of his only written sermons was delivered in October of 1840, and he writes this out with one of his clerks. He writes the sermon out, and then he doesn't deliver it because I don't really have a facility with reading or what, but he doesn't deliver the sermon. His clerk actually reads the sermon in general conference in October 5th, and 1840. And in this sermon, he's very clear about the necessity of Elijah, not that he actually happened, that he came, but the importance of Elijah in kind of ratifying every ordinance, not just marriage or anything else, but all priesthood kinds of acts require this ratification authority of Elijah to be permanent. Otherwise, they wouldn't be permanent. And DNC 132 goes through a similar kind of statement about the permanence of contracts. When are they permanent? In the afterlife. And it never mentions Elijah, but it does say you have to be contracted by priesthood. So that 1840 sermon reappears in the Revelation in that sense.
Well, this brings me out right back to concubines again. So when in DNC 132, when it says that Solomon had many wives and concubines and they were ordained of the Lord, are those concubines, are those binding after death, or are those just time only? Can we think of those as time only sealings?
I don't know. I think it's, like I said, to trying to connect the dots between the two eras is probably a mistake. I don't know what they thought about them. Or you know, we tried it really hard. If you go into an institute or seminary class or something, if they actually mention anything like this, it's very important to connect the dots.
I never mentioned that in any of my institute classes.
Well, if you go to BYU religion classes, sometimes it shows up. But yeah, it's not useful, I think, because they're really different eras. People thought about things in vastly different ways, and the meanings of things was vastly different. We like to think that there's some kind of continuing thread from the beginning on down to now, but that's not the way people understood things then.
Well, because, you know, Brian Hales talks a little bit about the idea of a time-only ceiling, and I'm trying to remember, I need to get this better, but I know that late in Joseph's life, he married a woman who was much older than him, I believe she was in her 50s. And, you know, and actually, I will also just mention this one that comes to mind, the younger brides, Mary Elizabeth Rollins-Leitner, and some of those other younger ones. Brian argues those were just time-only sealings, that there were no sexual relations in them. So, I mean, does DNC 132 allow for this idea that Brian's bringing up with this time-only sealing?
I think Brian is free to argue that way because he wants to see this theologically. I don't argue theology at all in the book. I don't want to go into that. So maybe there's some merit to this. I don't know, but I don't try to go there, and I don't try to justify or try to religiously understand what Joseph Smith is doing. I think it's impossible. But it may be helpful, comforting to some people who are having trouble with this. Maybe they need a justification like that or some kind of narrative that fits that. And that's a perfectly legitimate activity, but I don't do it in the book.
Okay, so you're not trying to make it all nice and neat together.
This is not a devotional book at all.
Okay. So.
By saying that, I don't mean that it's some kind of anti-Mormon screed or anything. It's not that at all.
No, it's just very, very academic. So that's, you know, I've enjoyed what I've read so far. So, all right. Well, so you just kind of leave these messy parts messy.
Well, the things that I can try to approach historically, I try to. The things that require some sort of theological insight that is beyond strictly what's the written record sort of leaves us with, that I think is out of my pay grade.
Okay.
And so, but I think other people are free to, and maybe this is a very constructive thing, not talking against Brian at all, because I appreciate all the work that he's done. So I think that can be an important activity. It's not what I do in the book, though.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Bill Smith. In our next conversation, we'll talk about the idea of being saved. In Protestant churches, one can often say a special prayer and be saved, be guaranteed to enter into heaven. Is there a similar idea in Mormonism? Can Mormon men and their children be saved unconditionally?
It was a great thing to be a child of somebody like that. Theoretically, it was a great thing to be their child because, as Joseph says, I on the other side of the veil, I will claim what I seal. In other words, anybody he's sealed to is guaranteed to go into heaven with him, because he's guaranteed in the revelation, in fact, that he'll be going to heaven.
Thank you so much for listening. Make sure that you like our page on facebook.com/gospeltangents. You can subscribe at YouTube at youtube.com/gospeltangents. We're also on Twitter @gospeltangents, as well as make sure that you subscribe on iTunes so you don't miss any of our episodes. Thanks again for listening. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some more of our videos. Thanks again.